Okay, chapter 14. Perfect peace lies in freedom from characteristic delusions. This is a very long chapter, but actually it's very simple. It means detachment from form. Detachment from form. Detachment from form. The form of your anger, the form of your fear, the form of anything in your mind. Everyone has some feeling. Everyone has some emotion. Everyone has some reaction, some memory, some idea, some prejudice, some belief, some understanding, something. This means let it go. Perfect peace means letting go of the form of what you're carrying in your head, because it's not real anyway. I'm going to read it very quickly because it's a very long teaching, but its point is very, very simple. Upon the occasion of hearing this discourse, Subhuti had an interior realization of its meaning and was moved to tears. Subhuti is so grateful to realize how liberating, how liberated he already is. If he just lets go of concepts in his head, if he just lets go of them, he's already free. And he's very grateful. It's like a man who's ready to work, hard job, work all day, 24 hours a day, work to earn money, to become a rich man. And the Buddha says, oh, here's your bank account. You have $1 billion in it already. It's like someone who thought they were poor, and the Buddha shows them, oh, by the way, you're already better than Bill Gates. Crying. Grateful. Not that the Buddha gave him the money, gave him anything. The Buddha showed him, hey, stupid, look at your bank book. You're already free. You're already a rich person. Just let go of everything. It's already there. Then, crying. Gratitude. Whereupon he addressed the Buddha thus, it is a most precious thing, world-honored one, that you should deliver this supremely profound discourse. Never have I heard such an exposition since of my old of eye of wisdom first opened. World-honored one, if anyone listens to this discourse in faith and a pure, lucid mind, he will thereupon conceive an idea of fundamental reality. We should know that such a person establishes the most remarkable virtue. World-honored one, such an idea of fundamental reality is not, in fact, a distinctive idea. Therefore, the Tathagata teaches, idea of fundamental reality is merely a name. So, let go of it all. An idea of truth, idea of Buddhism, idea of Dharma. Let it all go. Put it all down. Already, you have everything. Already, your mind is complete. That's wisdom. It's not something you get. Wisdom is not something you get. It's something you already have. Very simple. Very subversive. You don't need a god for it. You don't need a Buddha for it. You already are it. Stupid. World-honored one, having listened to this discourse, I receive and retain it with faith and understanding. This is not difficult for me, but in ages to come, in the last 500 years, if there be men coming to hear this discourse who receive and retain it with faith and understanding, they will be persons of most remarkable achievement. Wherefore? Because they will be free from the idea of an ego entity, free from the idea of a personality, free from the idea of a being, and free from the idea of a separated individuality. And why? Because the distinguishing of an ego entity is erroneous. Likewise, the distinguishing of a personality or a being or a separated individuality is erroneous. You don't need a shrink to take away your psychological problems. Why? Because they don't exist. Your fear, your anger, your ignorance. You don't need a religion to take it away. Or a process or a religion. Because it's not there. Already. It doesn't exist. Likewise, the distinguishing of a personality or a being or separate individuality is erroneous. Consequently, those who have left behind every phenomenal distinction are called Buddhas. Who have left behind all phenomenal distinctions are called Buddhas. Good and bad, put it down, that's a Buddha. Right and wrong, put it down, that's a Buddha. Correct and not correct, put it down, that's a Buddha. Pure and impure, put it down, that's a Buddha. Good and bad, put it down, that's a Buddha. Buddha and not Buddha, put it down, that's a Buddha. Putting it down, already you are complete. Already we are, our fundamental nature doesn't need anything. It's already complete as it is. It's like space. How can you say it needs something to be complete? It's already complete as it is. That's all. It just has to realize that, your life. You realize that, that's complete. Buddha said to Subhuti, just as you say, if anyone listens to this discourse and is filled with neither alarm nor awe nor dread, that's amazing. If you can hear this teaching and not be freaked out by it, not be scared by it, it's scary to some people that there's a teaching that's not a teaching. Everyone wants to hold on to something. I have to hold on to my religion, my God, my belief, my church, my dogma, my theology, my... Now they hear about a teaching that is not a teaching separate from other teachings. It's not that. So some people get nervous. Some people get worried. So if you can hear this teaching and it doesn't freak you out, it doesn't worry you, because some people can get worried. Oh, well, then everything is empty. Then nothing. Then... I don't need to do anything. I don't need to be care about anything. I don't need to make... No, it's not that. If you can hear this teaching and not fall into that, not attached to emptiness, you are a person of great merit and great karma. It means that you have made great karma. You have some insight already from a previous life, maybe, into this. Wherefore, because, Subhuti, the Tathagata teaches that the first perfection, you know, the first paramita, the first paramil, boshi, is not the first perfection. Such is merely a name. So, don't worry about anything. Just put it down. Just put it down and do it. When you see the sky, you see the sky is blue. When you see a tree, you see trees green. When you hear the fan, you hear the fan. That's all. That's your life. You don't need any special understanding of it in order to function. Just hear, just smell, just taste, just touch, just think as it is. That's already enough. But everyone wants to hold on to something to get through their life. Some religion, some belief system, some dogma, some ideology, some practicing. Subhuti, the Tathagata teaches likewise that the perfection of patience is not the perfection of patience. Such is merely a name. It's a beautiful story. And I'll say it very quickly. The Buddha talks about a past life, about his own patience mind. He was a Suhengja in his past life before he became Buddha, called Kshanti. And he was out in the forest just meditating, and there the king was out there with all these beautiful women who were with him. His harem had, like, you know, 20 wives, you know, and they have all this food, and they're out in the forest playing and dancing and having a party. And the king fell asleep. And then the women saw this beautiful, handsome monk meditating in the forest and came up to him and started talking to this wonderful, handsome monk. It was Kshanti. And he started talking to them about patience. Forbearance, really. forbearance, endurance. And as they were, he was talking to them, teaching them, they were all very happy. And the king woke up and he saw this and he got very jealous. He saw this beautiful, handsome monk talking to these women and he got very jealous. And he said, okay, you teach forbearance, you teach endurance, how about I cut off your nose? How about I cut off your ears? How about I cut off your lips? How about I cut off your arms? How much endurance do you have now? And the Buddha just went, and the guy cut off his nose, cut off his ears, cut off his lips. And the Buddha didn't move. He had pity on him. When the Raja of Kalinga mutilated my body, I was at that time free from the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, and a separated individuality, like Jesus being beaten before he's hung on the cross. Wherefore, because then, when my limbs were cut away piece by piece, had I been bound by the distinctions aforesaid, feelings of anger and hatred would have been aroused within me. Subhuti, I remember that long ago, sometime during my last 500 mortal lives, I was an ascetic, practicing patience. Even then, was I free from those distinctions of separated selfhood. Those distinctions of separated selfhood. Therefore, Subhuti, bodhisattvas, all of you bodhisattvas should leave behind all phenomenal distinctions. Leave behind your idea of self and awaken the thought of the consummation of incomparable enlightenment. How? By not allowing the mind to depend upon notions evoked by the sensible world. That means don't depend upon any thinking that arises in your mind. Good thinking, bad thinking, happy thinking, sad thinking, excited thinking, worried thinking, nervous thinking, anxious thinking, Buddhist thinking, Christian thinking, female thinking, Korean thinking, American thinking, any thinking, don't rely on it. Don't believe it's real, because it ain't real. Doesn't matter how strong it is, it passes. But when you believe it's real, you make a separate thing. I'm the only one who understands. You don't. You've made a separated individuality. So you cannot endure the suffering of this world. By not allowing the mind to depend upon notions evoked by sounds, odors, flavors, touch contacts, or any qualities. The mind should be kept independent of any thoughts that arise within it. Boom! The sixth patriarch heard this line. And boom, got enlightenment. Huineng heard that sentence. The mind should be kept independent of any thoughts that arise within it. If you need to write down any one thought and put it on your bedroom wall, right? If you want to write down one sentence from this, you can. I don't encourage you to, but some people like that style. Just that sentence. This is the most important sentence in the whole sutra. The most important teaching in the whole sutra. Many people have read this line or chanted this line and boom, got enlightenment. This is the whole teaching of the sutra. The whole teaching of the sutra is mind should be kept independent of any thoughts that arise within it. Mind, don't touch any thought that arises in your mind. Just don't touch it. Just don't depend on it. Don't grab it. Don't attach to it. And you're free. Leave it alone. Don't attach to any thinking which arises in the mind. Sixth patriarch heard this line, someone chanted it, boom, he got enlightenment. That's all. If the mind depends upon anything, it has no safe or sure haven. If your mind depends upon anything, if it holds any thought, any feeling, any emotion, any memory, If it holds anything, if it punk, grabs anything, you're no longer safe. You are exposed to suffering. Your own suffering. It's amazing. This is why the Buddha teaches that the mind of a bodhisattva should not accept the appearances of things as a basis when exercising charity. That's why the Buddha teaches, don't expect to get anything good back. Subhuti, as bodhisattvas practice charity for the welfare of all living beings, they should do it in this manner. Don't attach to whether you get thanked or not for your hard work. Don't attach. If you boast, true boshi is not giving. We say it's giving, but actually it just means you connect with someone else. But the minute you, oh, will they thank me for it? Boom, you're dead. Because maybe they will. But maybe it will be enough or not be enough. And probably they won't. So you'll suffer. Either way, you'll get some kind of suffering. So don't depend on any expectation of charity mind. Charity, not just money giving mind. Charity, doing something, helping someone. Okay? Very simple. It's very clear teaching. Don't attach to anything which arises in the mind. Very simple. Subhuti, the Tathagata is he who declares that which is true, he who declares that which is fundamental, he who declares that which is ultimate. He does not declare that which is deceitful, nor that which is monstrous. Subhuti, that truth to which the Tathagata has attained is neither real nor unreal. The truth that the Buddha attained, the truth that you attain when you hear that saw going off outside or the fan, that truth that you hear, it's not real. And it's not unreal. Just hear. Just see. Just smell. Just touch. Subhuti, if a bodhisattva practices charity with mind attached to formal notions, he is like a man groping sightless in the gloom. But a bodhisattva who practices charity with mind detached from any formal notions is like a man with open eyes in the radiant glory of the morning, to whom all kinds of objects are clearly visible. That's like Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa or a Gandhi. Or your mothers. How much your mothers did for you to bring you into this world. The pain, risking death, the suffering, no private time to themselves. Cannot even eat a meal, they got to put food in your stupid mouth. Wipe your shit off your own ass. Never ask for thanks. If a mother asks for thanks, never raise this child. That's a true bodhisattva. Subhuti, if there be good women and good men and good women in future ages able to receive, read, and recite this discourse in its entirety, the Tathagata will clearly perceive and recognize them by means of his Buddha knowledge. And each one of them will bring immeasurable and incalculable merit to fruition. That just means Buddha sees Buddha. Buddha sees Buddha. That's all. Buddha sees Buddha. How do I know that? How can I prove that Buddha sees Buddha? We can prove that in Buddhism. Buddha sees Buddha. How do you prove that? Like that. All of you heard that. All of you saw that through your eyes. Buddha sees Buddha. Everyone saw it. Everyone saw the same experience. Everyone hears that saw outside. Buddha sees Buddha. Very simple. So when you hear that and I hear that, Buddha sees Buddha. Buddha sees Buddha. Beautiful teaching. This Buddha nature, your experience of it, my experience of it, it's the same experience. We have the same experience, the same moment, the same sound, if you want to be stupid about it. That means Buddha saw Buddha. Chapter 15, the incomparable value of this teaching. Again, this is just like a previous chapter. Before becoming a monk, the greatest merit, the greatest thing in the world was becoming a monk. It is a great thing still, if you practice, if you attain it, if you attain a moment of this, that's great. But the Buddha is saying here, in Mahayana Buddhism, yeah, that Hinayana style is not bad, not good. But greatest merit is you get this teaching. That is the greatest. Whether you have hair or don't have hair, that is the greatest merit. That's the greatest Buddha Dharma Sangha. Okay? Very simple. Sabuti, if on the one hand a good man or a good woman performs in the morning as many charitable acts of self-denial, getting up every morning, 3,000 bows, then give all your money away, then clean the temple, then go and give food to poor people, then give blood in the afternoon. That's great merit. But actually, if you get even four lines of this teaching, what it's pointing at, if you get that experience, that very clear experience, which means moment, if you just attain this moment, if you see clearly, hear clearly, smell clearly, taste clearly, touch clearly, this moment, and see that that's fundamentally empty, that it's not good, bad, pure, impure, near, far, Buddhist, Christian, male, female, Korean, American, if you get that, that's better than simply becoming a monk. Then this second paragraph is very interesting. Sabuti, we can summarize the matter by saying that the full value of this discourse can neither be conceived nor estimated, nor can any limit be set to it. That's amazing. The value of this teaching, you can't estimate it. It's so great. Not great like, wah. It's so awesome. It's like space. It's so fundamentally huge that it can't be measured. That's all. And then at the bottom. In every case, a person who gets this teaching will exemplify the Tathagata consummation of incomparable enlightenment. Wherefore, because, Sabuti, those who find consolation in limited doctrines, interesting, those who find consolation in limited doctrines, this is good, this is bad, this is pure, this is impure, this is right, this is wrong. This is good, this is bad. If you do this, you go to heaven. If you do that, you go to hell. Watch. Those who find consolation in limited doctrines, limited because it can only be like this. If you believe this, you believe it. If you don't, you go this. That's limited. It's not a universal value. If you're in that box, you function according to that box. If you're outside that box, that Christian box, that Republican box, that American-style box, that modern box, that Jinbo-jok box, that progressive box, that Bosu-jok box, that conservative box, if you're in this limited, you function like this, 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 this means this, this means this, this is bad, this is good, this is it. That's called a limited doctrine. It's a limited doctrine. It's limited to itself. Wherefore, because, Sabuti, those who find consolation in limited doctrines involving the conception of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality, are unable to accept, receive, study, recite, and openly explain this discourse. So, people who accept their religion in a limited form, for whom their religion is this and not that. In Buddhism, there's no thing that is this and not that. This is a Buddhist thing, this is a non-Buddhist thing. This kind of action is good for Buddhists, this kind of action is not Buddhist. Buddhism doesn't function that way. It's a universalist teaching. It embraces all. So, if you have understood even that much, Even that point that I made, you don't have to be able to write a PhD on it. But if you get it, that makes a little sense. That there's a limited way of looking at spiritual life, and that there's this universal way that's beyond good and evil. That's beyond Buddhist or Christian or anything. If you get even a grain, even a mustard seed amount, if you go, oh man, that makes sense. Boom. Your merit is unbelievable. Why? Because you can't understand that just the first time you hear it. If that makes sense to you even a little bit right now, even a little bit, that means in previous lives, previous life, previous life, previous life, you have studied this teaching. You can't get it in one sitting. He says, if some part of you goes, huh, this kind of makes a little bit of sense, actually. If you look at other teachings, they're just in a little box, very narrow-minded. If you get that much, the Buddha says here, it means you have made great merit in past lives. It means you have already done some practicing. A very simple, stupid way we can do that is, if you see, you know, you meet, I just met in Hong Kong about a week ago, this child that's really good at math. 7 years old, and the kid is already doing algebra. And I asked them, oh, how do you know? They said, I don't know. Every time I hear some new mathematical teaching or rule, it just makes sense. I don't have to think about it. It's like the little kid's like, I don't know. When the teacher says it, I already kind of learned it already somewhere. Past life. It's like Mozart pops out, boom, he's playing the violin. Actually, it wasn't the violin very well, it was the harpsichord, the keyboard. That's what the Buddha is just saying, the same thing about that. So if this makes any sense to you, congratulations. You've been practicing this for many lifetimes. That in itself is not good, not bad. Sabuti, in every place where this discourse is to be found, the whole realms of gods, men, and asura should offer worship. For you must know that such a place is sanctified like a shrine and should properly be venerated by all with ceremonial obeisance and circumambulation and with offerings of flowers and incense. That means that better than a holy temple, better than a holy place, better than a pilgrimage location, better than some stupa or pagoda or Palman de Jangong, better than that is one moment where you go, uh-huh. This makes sense. I don't completely get it, but that is a holy spot. Wherever a place, a mind can go, huh, this view seems right. Boom. That's a truly holy place. Because look at the world. How many people can do that? How many people can do that? How many people can look beyond their little religion box, their little Korean mental box, their little American mental box, their Uridang mental box, their, what's the other one? Hanaradang mental box, their conservative mental box. Whoever can go outside that and see there's this Ujugatan Chili. That there is this universal view that good and bad cannot touch. Anyone who can rise that conception, that's a holy act. Because it's so rare. It's so impossible. Who's doing that? Turn on the news. No one is. Especially in religion. So this sutra is pointing to that. That act where your mind goes, huh. In all creature activity, that's rare. The squirrels aren't, the dogs, the cats, the fish aren't. If you can do that, that spot is worthy of respect. Okay, chapter 16. Chapter 16 is very simple. So, very simple point. We can do this very quickly. Chapter 16, you have to understand that in the Theravada view, the Hinayana view, in the original Buddhism view, until this sutra came out. They believed that the karma that you have, the karma that you have is from many lifetimes, and it takes many lifetimes to get rid of it. And you get rid of it in stages. You're a once returner. No, you're called a thrice. They would say you have three more rebirths, then two more rebirths, then one more rebirth, then no more rebirths, then nirvana. Stages, 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 stages. But very interesting point here. The Buddha says here in this section, purgation through suffering the retribution of past sins. The point of this paragraph is karma can disappear in one moment. Karma does not disappear in stages. It's not like a big object that goes in stages, like an ice cube, like a big, huge iceberg that takes days and weeks and months and years to melt down, melt down, melt. This says, in one moment, when you heard that, there was no karma. There was no karma. Very interesting. It's not stages. In one moment, we all attained the same moment, the same mind. For one moment, no karma. Furthermore, Subhuti, if it be that good men and good women who receive and retain this discourse are downtrodden, their evil destiny or their heavy karma is the inevitable retributive result of sins committed in their past mortal lives. By virtue of their present misfortunes, the reacting effects of their past will be thereby worked out, and they will be in a position to attain the consummation of incomparable enlightenment. So, if you see your karma is empty, if you see your karma is empty, karma is gone. In a moment, your evil karma, your heavy karma, your sad karma, your angry karma, your confused karma, your anxious karma, your nervous karma, your desire karma, your fear karma. If you realize in one moment that it's empty, it's gone. That's all. So, in other words, a lot of people blame their karma on other people. There's whole countries that do that in the world. There's whole countries that do that in this world. There's whole countries. A very easy example would be something like North Korea, which says, our situation is only because of the Japanese and America, and maybe that's all. That's why we're having a hard time. Not anything else. We're doing everything okay. But they made this problem. Therefore, that's, or many countries in the Middle East do that. We have a bad situation because those people did something some years ago. Yeah, maybe that's true in some way, of course. But that's not a true understanding of the nature of karma. So, karma is, I make something, I get something. I make something, I get something. Ja op ja dukida. Ja op ja dukida. In Judeo-Christian tradition, you sow, you reap, you harvest what you planted. The thing that you are harvesting is only what you planted. It's not what it, remember, that phrase doesn't say, you harvest what Mr. Jones sowed. It says, you harvest what you reap. You harvest what you sowed. Wow, I got to get over this jet lag pretty quick. Very simple. So that's the law of karma. Very simple. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, in the Buddhist tradition. It's the same. So if you have insight into that, already your karma disappeared. Something. The effect of your karma somehow disappeared. Somewhat. So anything that you are experiencing in this life, anything that you are harvesting, that you are experiencing, the good things and the bad things, quote unquote, the difficult things and the easy things, the sad things and the confusing things, the thing that you're experiencing now is just the fruit that you planted before. So instead of blaming someone else, some other country, some other minjok, some other group, instead of blaming that, if you see that, then your difficult situation now just burns that away. It just burns it away. It just burns it away. That's all. But when people blame outside themselves, then they make more of it. You're just planting more. You're not overcoming it. You're planting more. So, don't believe me. Turn on the TV. And see how that is. The peoples and the countries and the religions and the belief systems that have that mind, you see, they're only making more of it. But the amazing thing about Buddhist teaching is no tachi. No tachi. No tachi. Someone tried to burn down this temple in 1996. We didn't run down the hill and burn down one of their buildings. No tachi. Ah. We looked at this and we said, ah, maybe our practice, some mistake. We must practice harder. Now, already 10 years, no one tried to burn our temple again. So this works. So, very interesting. If you see the karma you have in this life, don't blame anyone for it. Just accept. And already you are limiting it. You're letting it go. You are already letting it go. Letting it go means making it less. And it happens not in stages like Hinayana, next life, and the next life if you practice hard, and the next life if you practice hard, and then if you practice hard, next life you become a once returner, a twice returner, stages of life. No. In one moment. In one moment, there's no karma. No karma in that moment. Very simple. So, Subhuti, I remember the infinitely remote past before Dipankara Buddha. There were 84,000 myriads of multi-millions of Buddhas, and to all these I made offerings. Yes, all these I served without the least trace of fault. Nevertheless, if anyone is able to receive, retain, study, and recite this discourse at the end of the last 500-year period, he will gain such a merit that mine in the service of all the Buddhas could not be reckoned as 100th part of it. Not even 1,000th part of it. Not even 1,000 myriad multi-million. Indeed, no such comparison is possible. If you get that point, if you get the teaching point that this is fundamentally empty, your karma is empty, your thinking is empty, your desire is empty, your anger is empty, your ignorance is empty. If you get that, that's better than serving Buddhas for millions of years. Isn't it amazing what this teaching is doing? It's not saying become a slave to Buddhism, become a slave to ritual, become a slave to practicing, become a slave to that. I remember this monk, a friend of mine, his teacher is a very great monk, and he said to this other Kunstnim, he said, oh, my teacher is very great. He never missed one kyolche in 35 years. He never missed one dongango, one haango. In 35 years, he never missed a kyolche. And in the middle kyolches too, he never missed one day of one kyolche. He still is practicing every day, he said to this other kunstnim. That's my teacher. He's great. He never missed 1 hour of one kyolche. He's great. That's great. He's like a diamond, he said to this kunstnim in Sobek. He said, my teacher's great. Never missed any practice. And the kunstnim said, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear your teacher hasn't yet realized that. So he should do another one. And another kyolche. I'm sorry to hear that. So it's not the form of doing the kelche. It's not the form of, I did this, that's another one. I did this, that's another one. I'm this level, I did this, this person only does this. It's not that. That's already hell. It's already suffering. It's already not Buddhism. Something like Christianity, maybe. But if you get in this moment that your thinking is empty, fundamentally, you don't need 35, 100, 500 kelches. You don't need anything. You don't need Buddha. You don't need God. You don't need anything. So that's amazing, this teaching. What a liberation. Better than serving the Buddha is. I mean, what religion says that? Where do you find that kind of a teaching? Imagine this. Better than serving God is help your fellow man. That's all. End of story. You won't find that anywhere. So this is an amazing teaching. So the Buddha says, I got great merit doing this. I got great merit, the Buddha says, serving all these Buddhas for many lives. But if you get this teaching right now, that your thinking is empty, better than what I did for all these Buddhas. Do you like that? That's amazing. So this is truly a teaching of liberation. It's truly, it's all back to you. It all goes back to you. It all goes back to you. How wonderful. It doesn't depend on any form, any obligation. It doesn't depend on that. How good you did or didn't do that. It doesn't depend. How you keep your mind right now. That's all.